it's likely that there's something a contractor or a freelancer can do better than anyone in the company.
Why?
Because the company's just not good at that yet.
You're listening to the world's best business podcast with Steli Efti and Heaton Shaw, who insisted on having Steli's name mentioned first, despite him having more Twitter followers. If you're an entrepreneur who wants to get shit done, stop everything else and focus on this podcast for the next 20 minutes. Then go back to work and crush it.
All right. So today we're going to talk about how to hire and work with freelancers, contractors, people that are not full-time members of your company.
That's right.
How many freelancers have you hired in your career?
Probably close to 1,000 in the last 12 years.
All right. Holy Wait, shit.
12? Yeah, 12 years.
12 years. All right. So you might know a thing or two about it.
Yeah.
So I don't know how many freelancers or contractors I've hired. Probably it's more in the like 50
sure.
or so range. Yeah. But usually with somebody else in my team dealing with it. So I personally have very little experience finding the freelancer or contractor and working with them.
Yeah.
Usually somebody else in the company would do that. So, and this points to probably one of my number one challenges why I haven't done it as much. And I'm curious about this is working with people in a way that is less committed, right? Which means I don't know them as well. I don't care about them maybe as much. I don't invest in them as much. And they feel the same way about me. And which it's kind of like the analogy between like marriage or a serious relationship versus like you're just like dating or having one night stands, right? You're just getting to something that both parties want and then you move on.
Yeah.
And that's hard for me to get excited about a really or not feel like I'm wasting my time if I'm investing time in that. How do you feel about like making this work for your company when you work with people that are not fully committed to your company? And that's fine.
Sure. They're still fully committed to something.
Yeah.
They could be fully committed to their craft or the work they do, or they could just simply be fully committed to having a life where they're not tied down to any one company. So really, I mean, I think that's a deeper later topic once you find people, but like in general, like there are people that don't want to be full-time. And one thing I would say is like in any company, anyone, even a large one like Google, it's likely that there's something a contractor or a freelancer can do better than anyone in the company.
Why?
Because the company's just not good at that yet.
Okay.
It's like, for example, right? Okay. So in your company today, there's probably a bunch of stuff you guys aren't good at.
Yeah.
Right? And there's somebody out there that can help you do that.
Yep.
And if that's an important thing for you to do, you should find that somebody. And that somebody might not be a full-time hire. In fact, a full-time hire might take forever in some of these roles.
Yeah.
Right? And it's much easier to find a freelancer. For example, between 99designs, Dribbble, Elance, and I guess now they call it Upwork, right? Another one. And probably the long tail of these sites where literally they have human beings for sale.
Yeah.
Right? They have profiles. It's like human beings. You can buy them, right?
You can buy them
for some amount of time, right?
Yeah.
That's really what it is. I think the proliferation of that has made it easy to find great people that are contractors or freelancers.
All right. So let's talk about
that. That's a huge thing.
Let's talk about that.
Yeah.
Has it really? So is the greatest I totally subscribe that there's a slice of great talent that wants a specific type of lifestyle that fits into the freelancer and contractor work.
Yeah.
But I would also venture to say that another big part of that community or audience has difficulties. I don't know. In some cases, it's an arbitrage between different like markets and places in the world.
Yeah.
Right. You find great talent somewhere.
Yeah.
It's cheaper than here.
But hang on, let me stop you. You're overthinking it.
All right.
It's very simple. You need work done. There's people out there to do it. How do you get them to do it and get the best work out of them?
Right.
That's the bottom line.
How do you find the great people? Do you literally go to these places?
Before these sites existed, because I used to find people before this that we used to, we had to go hunt them down.
Where?
We had to go do Google searches. We had to go search Blogger. We had to go like find where they're blogging, find where they hang out. We had to go find their portfolios. Like this was not easy.
Yeah.
Right? Now it's much easier. Now, what we used to do though is I'm going to pick a specific one. So for design, right? Any kind of design, infographics all the way to user interface, right? That kind of covers it all basically, or even posters and graphic design. We used to go look at the CSS galleries. Do you know what those are?
Yeah.
Okay. So this is when CSS and HTML was like hot.
Yeah.
Because before that, we used Flash to do crazy shit on websites, right? And so once it started getting hot, I'm guessing this is 05, 06, there's a lot of CSS galleries. Well, guess what? About 40 to 50% of the sites they profile at the CSS galleries, it was basically just sites that would show off other sites that people have created. So 40 to 50% of them were actually freelancers that built really cool sites, right? That want that would get business because they got on there. So then we would just find people that way.
Yeah.
But that wasn't a deliberate marketplace. It wasn't a place where I actually go and can hire somebody, right? So now because of, let's just take Dribbble, right? Let's say you mentioned this in some other podcast, but infographics, you guys don't do them, right? Yeah. Do you have $2,500 to spend just to see and find somebody?
Yeah.
Great. So what I would do is I would take a budget. Let's say it's $2,500, right? Maybe it needs to be more. I don't know, right? I don't know what infographics cost right now, but even at that budget, it would work. And then I would divide it by five. So that's $500 each. And I would basically give five people the same task for $500. And each person would get the $500. And then I would find everything out. I would know the quality of the work, how they communicate, and anything else I might want to know about them, even how they take the input I give them, which might be the same input I'd give someone on the internal team to do something. And then I'd have these five different versions of this process done based on these people that I hired. And from there, I've always found at least one that I can rely on.
Okay. So have you built relationship with some of these? I'm assuming some of these freelancers or contractors turn into full-time eventually.
Yeah.
Some of them might have been lifelong freelancers that you work with. Like, what was the relationship over the thousand people that you work with?
And there's freelancers, and then there's also services businesses. And for me, for me, they end up being one and the same.
Okay.
Just because I generally treat them very similar.
Okay.
Right? Services businesses cost more because usually there's a whole team behind it, right?
Mm-hmm.
While freelancers are generally less expensive.
Yes.
Skill set, obviously, they could be more even, but in general, on average. So, I mean, I think one of the ways I think about it is, even if I'm looking for a full-time hire, I still need to have some pool of people I can find, right? So that's more of a recruiting task, right? So at Kissmetrics, actually, when we knew we wanted to do infographics, we actually did this exact process. We took five, and we spent $500 each, and we went on Dribbble, and we basically found one person. That person is actually a full-time team member at the company now.
Hmm.
But he was a freelancer for 18 months.
Okay.
And after a while, we actually brought him on at 40 hours a week, almost pretty much full time. But he had a criteria, right? He didn't live where we were mostly, even though we were distributed. And he really didn't want a job like that. He just wanted flexibility of time. So what actually ended up happening in that specific case is the freelancing, which was one $500 infographic, turned into hourly work for him, which turned into a full-time job.
Mm.
But the way that progressed was it helped us understand what his needs were. So we figured out he wanted to, in the middle of the day, go and do whatever he wanted to do. We don't really care as long as he's working and getting stuff done.
Right.
Right. So once we realized that was his reasoning for not going full time, we're like, oh, we'll give you that opportunity and you could be full time.
Yeah.
Right. So it worked out. So I think it's easier than ever now to do those five experiments, right? Or five examples with five different people in almost any category, even programming, and then figure out whether you like working with a person or not.
Yeah.
So in a way, like, we've adopted that tactic even for hiring. Like, if we have a bunch of candidates, we're really excited about two or three of them, we'll give them a project to do. We might even pay them for the project, right? And in that process, we'll learn everything about how it actually is like to work with this person.
Yeah.
So it's something we've used commonly now.
I mean, this is an important tactic. I couldn't agree more with it. Like, never just get married immediately. Just date a little bit or move in together.
That's right. Yeah.
So the metaphor here is you do some work.
Go on a few dates.
Yeah. Do some work, right?
Yeah,
even if it's somebody that's, it's a support hire or salesperson.
Yeah.
Yeah. A month, or 2 weeks. Come here and do some sales with us. Get paid.
Or even give them, if you want to do it faster, you can even do it faster than that amount of time. You can give them example scenarios and see how they respond. So, for example, in support, whether it's a freelancer or even someone full-time, the example work I'd give them is I'd actually give them my hardest support case and tell them they have an hour to respond or 30 minutes and literally hand it to them as if they don't know anything, right? Because there's FAQs, help stuff on your site. And commonly someone in support will get questions they don't know how to answer.
Yes.
So you could just give them a sample scenario, give it to five different candidates and literally send it to them and say you have an hour.
Right. So how do you deal with certain barriers, right?
Yeah.
So a lot of times you might get great talent somewhere where English is not that great. So there might be some communication barrier, although the quality of work is great.
Yeah.
It might take more time or it might slow the process down or create sometimes bad work just because there was communication breakdowns. How do you think about that? Do you care about it? Is that a requirement? You need to be great at English?
Yeah.
Or
how do you think about that? So to me, nothing's a requirement. The reason is I'm pretty sure if someone's quality of work is high, all the other problems can be solved. But you need to learn what they are. So I think the brilliance of this process is you get to learn it cheap and fast.
Right.
Like you even said 2 weeks and a month, that's too long for me for anything like this, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I want to know within a few days. ideally, or even a few hours. So I think when you have these barriers like that, it's just about identifying whether it's a actual communication problem and an actual problem the other side actually has that they can't resolve, or there are ways around it. For example, if it's a design one and there's a communication barrier in terms of language, even written language, then visually communicate it. Cross out shit on the designs, right?
Yeah.
Write different shit. Give them the copy first so they don't have to think about it, right? But if you do this process, you'll know exactly where the holes are, and you won't have invested thousands of dollars to hire the person full time, or even thousands of dollars on a big project with the person. Just do something small and see if like the way they work works for you, or the quality of their work you like. So then you'll figure out how to work with them.
Do you think that generally startups are bad at working with freelancers and contractors because they always want to just hire people internally?
I think startups shun freelancers and contractors because they want internal dedicated people.
Yes.
But like I said earlier, even for a company like Google that has, I don't know, 100,000 employees. I don't remember how many team members, right?
Many,
right? There's people out there.
By the way, you mean Alphabet, maybe.
Yeah, Alphabet, my bad. Alphabet. Sorry, Alphabet. They just changed their name.
Yeah.
Well, they did more than that.
Yeah.
But the point is that, like, I think startups should think about it. I mean, look, if you're self-funded, you're probably going to go a contractor route anyways.
Yes.
Right? Because you're self-funded and you're trying to keep – you don't want to have a commitment to anybody unless you're ready to support that family or that person or whatever, right? So I think if a self-funded company is thinking like they need full-time people, they're wrong for sure.
Right.
Right? Because they just can't support it.
And, yeah.
And so even in my self-funded companies, a lot of our work is contracted out, and we've had the same contractors for years.
Yeah.
Could be services businesses or freelancers, and it's all good.
Yeah.
Right. And it's just, you know, I know you mentioned earlier about, oh, you know, the stickiness of that type of person and all that. It's just really understanding if that person's ever going to be a full-time person or not. And if you understand that, then you know that if you like them, you want to grab them before anyone else does.
Yeah.
Right. But if they're not, then you just work into that. Right.
Yeah.
What are problems freelancers have? Let's talk about the other side real quick.
Yeah.
One, they don't get paid on time. Two, they might do work they don't get paid for because they don't know they should be asking for payment upfront, at least a percentage of it.
Yeah.
So they learn all this. Right. Three, they want consistency. So one of their biggest problems is always trying to find new work.
Yeah.
So if you find someone you like, you can pretty much guarantee them work to some extent. And if you do that, they're going to stay with you.
Yeah.
And if you even help them build their business, they're going to stay with you. So people that I think are awesome, the interesting thing is they don't generally always have capacity, right? So I won't necessarily give them more business. But if I understand their capacity, understand how much I can give them, I will give them more work from other people just so that they stay freelancing and they don't look for work, and I help them get more work.
Right.
And then who do they love more?
How do you find these things out? Do you spend time separated away from the actual work to be like, hey, how is life? What are you looking for? Yeah. How do you find out all these things? How do you build the relationship with them?
So the basis of a services or a freelancer is pretty simple, the basic of it. You pay them money, they do great work. If they don't do great work, you don't even bother going into these areas. So for me, it's first, do I want to work with them?
Yes.
Then it's just a conversation of, oh, hey, let's do more together.
Yeah.
So after that $500 each and I figure out the one, I just have a conversation, a quick one about, hey, I want to do more with you. What does that look like? And then I'll learn whether they want full-time or not. I'll learn what their capacity is, and I'll learn how much other business they already have. And based on that, I can determine what we should do as a company with that freelancer or that person.
Yeah. All right. What about price? Like a lot of people think of using freelancers as a cost-saving tactic, right? It didn't sound like that's your number one goal when you work with freelancers. It's more about speed than about saving money. Like how do you think about that? Like when you have multiple – and you, even your example of like you take – you know, 2.5 K, you 500, didn't seem like you're that concerned about like choosing the cheapest or going for the most expensive ones. Do you have any bias towards that?
If you think about the cost on the other side, so the alternative, the 2,500 is super cheap. So if you think about the alternative of recruiting costs or the alternative of like somebody on your team doing it, right? It just starts looking cheap the way that I'm discussing, right?
Yeah.
I'm talking about. But ultimately, in terms of price, it really boils down to the work that you're trying to get done. So if you're price sensitive, that's cool. Your pool of those five, it might be $500 and it might be $100 each. That's okay, right? But the best process is when you find a cohort or a group of people that you can give the same project to.
Yeah.
So it's apples to apples. I don't care how much you pay.
Yeah.
So to me, it's just a factor of the group of people you choose to do this experiment with. I've even done things where some people are like 200, other people are like 500. That's okay. That helps me gauge it. So I sort of try to eliminate this issue of cost by just basing it on what my budget is for that thing and then starting out like that.
And also one important thing here, and we talked about it, but I want to highlight it again, is that you never give them the ultimate work you want to give them. You give them something they can do very fast so you can judge based on quality of work who you really want to work with. Because a lot of times people would choose freelancers by putting out the real project. Like, I want somebody to build my social networking app.
Oh, yeah.
And then they get like 100 bits and then they go, should I go with the cheap ones or should I go with the expensive ones? How about giving them something they can do like in 2 days or a day or a week?
When you're dealing with big services firms, it's hard to get them to do something small. I've gotten them to, but that's a different problem, right? Yeah. But when you're dealing with small work that you're trying to get done, like in the thousands of dollars or less for the projects, then what you're saying makes perfect sense, right? You can take a big project you have that might be like a 20 or 30 grand project and take a $500 piece of it. Like it could be a single screen. It could be a little area within a little design or something like that. Or it could be a single blog post if you're trying to hire like content writers or something. But like just being able to chunk it out is really important because what you're really trying to gauge early on is who do I want to give more work to? That's all you're trying to figure out. Yeah. Who do I want to give more work to?
Yeah. Do you ever go the referral? So you have like a lifetime of experience working with freelancers. You have some good sources, people you know and you trust.
Yeah.
But let's say you're a founder, you're just getting started.
Yeah.
Would you just go to like Elance or whatever the hell it's called today? Or would you ask some friends and go, hey, does somebody have good experiences with a freelancer? Can you connect me with? So, how do you find them when you're really at the beginning? You don't have that reference. You don't have that, you know, those relationships with people.
My preference, just because of the way I am, is actually not to ask anybody. Because generally, I think I have a different opinion of things than other people do. So I'd have to really trust your opinion in that topic to ask you even for a freelancer.
Okay.
I also know one thing which you mentioned earlier. Most startups and most friends of mine don't use freelancers.
Yes, that's true.
Right? You usually use them because you're a really large company.
Yeah.
And you have a lot of work you think you need to get done or whatever. Or you're just used to hiring them.
Even I think that a lot of our listeners are like self-funded, maybe one person at the very beginning.
Yeah.
And I think in those scenarios, you think about freelancers because you know you can hire people and you can do everything
own. You can't afford a full-time person doing that job. Yeah. So like this works really well for them. My process does require a budget, right? Yeah. So that you can spread it out a little bit.
Yeah.
But outside of that, the budget can be really small too. It's just going to be different. It's just going to be a different quality of work generally.
How would we go about the scenario where I'm a non-technical guy?
Yeah.
I want to build a self-funded business.
Yeah.
So I need some programmer to build me something. Yeah. Right?
Do you have any money?
Let's say I have some money, but it's not that much.
Yeah.
And let's put aside the, can you do something before building the product, right? Because I would tell that person, maybe you want to start writing.
Yeah, there's an assumption that they can talk to customers before. But let's say they've done that.
Let's say they've done that.
And now they need to build a product.
Yes. Yeah. And now I can't afford a freelancer. I can't hire somebody full-time. Yeah. But my problem is I don't trust my own judgment judging somebody in their code because I'm not a programmer.
Yeah.
Or trusting them in the recommendations they make in terms of which technology should we use.
Sure.
How do you deal with that scenario? Which I think a lot of people are in that scenario.
So anybody that's a freelancer that's doing engineering, right, and working for other people, generally is willing to at least do some work up front, even if it's 20 minutes of work to help you scope what you're doing, especially if you're not an engineer.
Yeah.
So what I'd be looking for in those scenarios is who are the freelancers that are willing to do that 20 minutes of work for me?
Yeah.
Because based on those 20 minutes of work, even if I have to pay them, usually I don't, they're giving me an outline of what I want. I want to find people who will actually poke holes in the complexity I'm creating or recommend technologies not based on their experience, but based on what I'm actually trying to do.
Right.
So there's a bunch of these small key signs. And I think it's just literally, the simplest way to think about it is even in the role of freelancing for engineering, you're still just trying to figure out who you want to work with.
Right.
So it has a lot to do with how they communicate with you. And even if you're not an engineer, that doesn't mean you don't know shit. You're still a human being, right?
Yeah.
So you can work with logic. So in engineering, it's mostly logic and it's pragmatic and it's rational.
So what are your tips from the other perspective? How do you, as a single founder, self-funded, not that much budget and technical know-how, not scare off the great freelancers when you approach them and talk to them?
Yeah, yeah. So you could just go to an engineer you know and ask them for advice on how to approach an engineer for freelancers. And depending on who that is, they might give you different advice, but at least they'll give you a basis of how do I approach an engineer if you don't know.
Yeah.
Right? In the case that I've had very often, even though I'm not an engineer, I'll do some research up front just to understand how other people have kind of solved the problem. So even if I don't know what Rails is or Ruby is or PHP is, there's a lot of blog posts out there about stacks and how people have done stuff. So I'll do some upfront homework. It won't be a ton, but it'll be enough where like it might be Hacker News. Go to one of the Hacker News search sites and type in something like show HN my landing page, or here's how I created blah. And then just read up on how someone just thinks about creating what you would as an engineer.
Right.
Right. Because there's a lot of founder engineers out there that are blogged about how they did it. So that'll give you a basis of like, how do I think about this? Also, you might be able to link to some of that stuff in your whole spec or your sort of requirements of what you think you want.
Right.
And then at least you're coming with some knowledge or at least some basis of understanding. And I think that today, if you're not an engineer and you're not going that far, you're doing it wrong. You have to have some basis of understanding. Otherwise, don't hire anybody.
Yeah.
And I don't mean you're a genius in it. I don't mean you even have to write a single line of code. I can't write code, right? But I can edit code now.
Yeah.
But I only did it by going through this process and trying to hire these people, right? But the biggest hack is literally don't just hire one person. Hire multiple people and have small enough project where you can evaluate them, even if your budget's small, right? And if you can't do that, then there's a lot of – you know what a lot of people will do on the freelance side? A lot of people have GitHub projects that are open. So you can go find their GitHub repositories and even have an engineer friend of yours evaluate all the people.
Right.
So that's one of the first things I actually do when I hire even a freelancer. Be like, do you have anything on GitHub? Do you have any code samples? Just so I can look at it.
Yeah.
And that already makes it so that it's not about me, a non-engineer, trying to get something from them. Yeah. It's about me just trying to get their work. So I can go evaluate it. Then I turn it into just like hiring a designer. Their work's already on Dribbble. They already have a portfolio. Well, engineers have portfolios today too.
Yeah.
And it's very likely if you're going to hire a freelancer, they've got GitHub already going.
Yeah.
And there's stuff they can share with you so that you can get that code evaluated.
Yeah.
And based on that, you can even narrow down who you decide to give the project to.
All right. Is it time for tips?
Yeah, pretty much.
All right. Let me go first and then you finish up the episode with it. So here's a tip of mine. And this is when you start hiring, doesn't matter if it's freelance or contract or full-time, whatever it is, if you start hiring for a role that you don't find yourself being an expert in, make the hiring process an educational process for you as well. And that will also help you basically tell who is a good person to work with or not. So for instance, right now, we are looking to hire a videographer, right? So with all these like freelance contract videographers showing up here, and I'm not just like asking all these questions, I'm doing a bit of research so I can ask some questions and figure some things out. But I also very obviously tell them, here's like a problem I have, how would you solve this? Or even more importantly, I asked yesterday one, all right, so I have three more videographers coming. What are some questions that I need to ask that I am not asking? What also, how do you evaluate somebody? If I thought of giving you this kind of a project, what's stupid about it? What is like, where do you as a videographer know that somebody gave you this project that hasn't thought it through or doesn't know something? So I'll try to get them to educate me on how to hire them better, how to interview them better. In the process, I learned something about them, right? Are they able to coach me and teach me? And do they like me? I'm authentic. So I'm not trying to pretend to overcome that insecurity that I really don't know what I'm talking about.
You're just like, I don't know.
Yeah, yesterday.
This is what I know, but I don't really know.
And I'm getting better at it.
Yeah.
I'm learning in the process, right?
Of course.
So yesterday somebody was here and he was setting up the camera and he told me how to do something. And I had to literally stop him and go, dude, I didn't understand a single fucking word you said. Explain it to me like I'm a little child because I don't know what you were saying.
Yeah.
And his reaction was laughing and going, all right, I get it. Sorry. And he broke it down to me. But I could tell there was a pivotal moment in the interaction because not just was it a human moment between us, but you could tell he appreciated me saying it.
Oh,
like,
great.
He appreciated
it. And if he didn't appreciate it, then you already know.
Yes,
you wouldn't hire him.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah,
like,
I do that.
I can't work with that.
Yeah, I call it the dumbass test. So my tip is the same, right?
Okay.
Just do the dumbass test.
Okay.
Right? The dumbass test is be the dumbass and make them explain something to you. So I've done that with every engineer I've worked with. And like, if they can explain to me really hard shit. So I've had data scientists who try to explain something to me. And I'm like, dude, I don't get it. Like, I'm going to have to look that up and Google the shit out of it. That's not okay.
Yeah.
Right? And then I've had other ones that are like explaining to me complex neural network shit in like words where I'm like, oh, that's it? They're
that's
like,
it?
Yeah, that's it. I'm like, shit. Right? I'm like, I want you.
Yeah.
You got it.
Yeah.
So and that just, for me, it just goes back to my thing. And you've heard this from me before, but it's like, everything's fucking simple.
Yeah.
We just make it too complicated.
Yeah.
So if we, you know, my tip around that would be just like, don't think it's so complicated.
Yeah.
And don't think that something even as like data science is so complicated that you can't understand it. What it really is someone that understands it has to be able to explain it to you. And those are the people you want to hire.
I love it. All right. That's it from us this week.
Cool.
Tune in more next week. We'll talk to you then.
Tell your friends.
Tell your friends. There you go.
Did you pick one of the two action items from Stelly and Heaton already?
Do that now and snap into action.
It's time to grow your business.